Cairo, Seattle.
It's time to get schooled with a professor, John Clayton.
Welcome to Schooled with a Professor. Joining us now from the NFL Network is Brian Billick. And, of course, Brian, the great part is, you know, you start the season, and it's great talking to you because, I mean, there's so many trends and things I'm trying to get into. And I guess the first thing to get started is your thoughts on what it's like right now to build an offensive line. Because I think we've noticed it, particularly in the last couple of years, certainly noticed it in the first week of the season. There's a lot of bad offensive lines in this league, and it's seeming to get harder and harder to rebuild them.
You're right, and think about it. Just the sheer numbers, and you're not talking about just the starting five. You've got to have that fifth man to either be your swing guard / center. You've got to have a swing tackle, and you've got to have depth in your offensive line as well. And the teams that are really good, you've seen, like the Dallas Cowboys and the Pittsburgh Steelers, they've put assets there. They've made that a priority by way of draft choices. So to try to piece a line together, it can be very, very difficult. I did the Baltimore Ravens preseason games, and they did not have their starting offensive line that showed up against Cincinnati. Did not take one snap the entire preseason. You know, it's one of those things where you just hope that it can come together and be functional.
Yeah, but the one thing is just seeming, it seems like it's not just like a watering down effect. It's like, okay, you have maybe a half dozen really good offensive lines, and there's a drop-off where almost everybody else is in the same state where they don't have a good offensive line.
Yeah, and it typically it's because, too, the value that you place on it, for instance, the guard position, which is not one that a lot of people put a lot of value in terms of, when I say value, I mean a first-round draft choice, something of that nature. But the center guard, the interior of the offensive line, obviously there's focus on the tackles, but it's the interior of the offensive line anymore. That's kind of the vogue thing, to get pass rush up the middle and to have that competent center that can make all the line calls, to have two good guards, to have the athleticism to get up to the second level. Yeah, it's and we're also talking about a time where in college football, the things they're doing in college football, offensive linemen, don't really resemble what they're going to do in the pro game. So there's a learning curve as well.
How many good offensive lines do you think there are in this league?
Oh, boy. You know, that's a tough one to quantify. If you're talking about top flight, you know, top of the heap, put assets in it, like the Dallas Cowboys, there's probably only four or five that you could really look at and say, okay, this team has really put, you know, the time in, and when I mean time and resources of putting an offensive line together. You know, in terms of some of the other solid, okay clubs, you know, maybe 10 deep. After that, you know, it's kind of like quarterback play. You know, once you get into the second half of the league, it doesn't take much to pick that apart.
Now, of course, Seattle had nothing but problems with the offensive line in the first game against the Green Bay Packers. And I know from being on the sidelines, the Green Bay Packers had problems on their offensive line, a line that used to be very, very good. What kind of overview for a team like Seattle, that's really for about 3-4 years have been trying to fix up the offensive line, and here they are 1 week into the season, and they don't know if it's fixed or not?
Yeah, that and they went into last, you know, we knew that was a problem last year in terms of the inability to run the ball, notwithstanding the loss of Marshawn Lynch, the fact that Russell Wilson's going to have to probably be a 500-plus throw guy that changes the dynamic when they were running up and down through the league, leading the league in rushing, and Russell Wilson was a 430-440 throw type guy. Now it puts a higher premium on it. It's interesting. They kind of felt they could stay put. They've got a lot of faith in Tom Cable and thought, you know what, we'll coach these guys up and we'll be okay. And obviously there's a little bit more to that because that group did struggle, obviously, against Green Bay. It's always hard in the first game to say, are we saying more about the Green Bay defense? Or are we saying less about the Seattle offensive line? So it's kind of, you know, which is it? In this instance, I think that offensive line still has some real issues.
Yeah, no question. And how much can that hold back a team? I think clearly it prevented Seattle last year from probably, you know, getting to the Super Bowl, although, you know, they a couple breaks here and there, they might have been able to make it. But, you know, it cost the first half of the season when Russell Wilson had two injuries. It certainly cost them about 100 carries because they missed about 100 carries. They like to run it 500 times. They ran it 403. But how much can that set you back?
Well, when your whole philosophy is wrapped around, as it is with Pete Carroll, play great defense, run the ball, and they're certainly going to play great defense, but their ability to run the ball from when they were, you know, at their height. Obviously, with Walls and Lacy and Procise, you know, it's going to be running back by committee per se. I don't think there's that dominant physical presence in any of those that you had Marshawn Lynch. We've already talked about the offensive line. And so that puts more pressure on Russell Wilson to make those plays down the field. Pete Carroll would love to be a 500 carry, 400 throw team, and there's not a lot out there. I mean, to be balanced in the NFL today is not 50-50. If you're 60% pass, 40% run, you're balanced in today's NFL, because typically it's going to be 70% pass, 30% run. They don't want to be there, but that's where they're at with a receiving core that is, it's an okay receiving core. I wouldn't call it in the top half of the league in terms of the receiving core. So when you look at the attendant pieces to an offensive line that seems to struggle a little bit, Russell Wilson's got, you know, he's got some issues around him that make it tough.
Yeah. Did you get a chance to look back at any film of the Seahawks game against Green Bay to kind of get some evaluations?
I did. And you know, again, anytime you look and you're just talking about one game, and yeah. I always go back. I've got all the film available to me as I prepare for my show playbook that we do every Wednesday on the NFL Network at 6 p.m. And I've got the Saber mechanism here where I can go back and look through every film, and that's exactly what I do. And when you look at it, again, going into Green Bay and losing to Green Bay, there's no shame in that now. Green Bay is pretty good. That first half, boy, you talk about a defensive slugfest. But Aaron Rodgers and what they were able to do in the second half, and I do think Green Bay is a better defense. Let's remember how beat up they were the second half of last season. So I don't think we should. I think this may have been more about a very good Green Bay team who's tough to beat at home, and Aaron Rodgers. I thought Martellus Bennett was the best free agency pickup of all of last season, because now when you opposite of him, if you want to go in one of those 3-by-1 sets that's so popular in the league right now, and you're going to have Jordy Nelson, who led the league in touchdown receptions last year, Devontae Adams, who was second in the league in touchdown receptions, you throw in a healthy, looks very fresh Randall Cobb, a Ty Montgomery who's now really gotten into the groove of his role. And opposite that, oh, by the way, we've now got Martellus Bennett, and you saw that in the second half of the game where all of a sudden some key downs, Martellus Bennett got the ball because you had to account for that three-receiver side. I think this was maybe more about Green Bay and how good they may be than the questions on Seattle.
By the way, these are the gems that you're going to be able to hear every Wednesday on the NFL Network on NFL Playbook. That's 3 p.m. Pacific time, and Brian does such a great job of breaking it down. In fact, I was on the sidelines, and I was doing the Packers sidelines, and what I was amazed at, because really Mike McCarthy was out there. I mean, he didn't use as many trip formations, three-receiver sets. In fact, there was probably about maybe, I'd say 30-35% of the time they're either in two tight end, a couple times three tight end, and then two back sets, and so they really kind of, and part of that, I think, is goes to the offensive line. You know, Brian Bulaga didn't play the game, and so they had a first-time right tackle start, and there's no experience on the backups right now for the line. So he looked protective, but in many ways it was effective.
Yeah, and Mike McCarthy for a while now, much like in New Orleans with Sean Payton, has talked about we need to be more balanced. We need to be able to run the ball. We really don't want, as brilliant as Aaron Rodgers is, we don't want to throw the ball 600-plus times. We want to be able to close out a game. We want to have a certain amount of physicality. So that means you're going to have more of the two tight end, include the running back. You know, they took this Jamal Williams out of BYU in the fourth round. I think he adds a physical dimension for them that they want to be able to have. What we saw against Seattle, I think, is more of what they would like to be as opposed to the pure three wides throw it 600 times.
Mm-hmm. No question. On the other side, Seattle's defense looks really good, particularly with the addition of Sheldon Richardson and adding a few veteran pass rushers to kind of give them a little bit more depth on the defense.
Yeah, I mean, that's hardly fair to add a player like the caliber Sheldon Richardson into that front seven of Seattle. And I noticed they were doing a lot more of what we used to call solid fronts, which means you basically bring the ends and the tackles down. You put Sheldon Richardson maybe over the nose, and then bring guys and cover up the center and the guards. Now that creates a lot, and then you can pepper those linebackers. That's going to create a lot of one-on-one matchups on the interior of an offensive line that are going to give people some problems. And, of course, the back end, that was impressive, what the back end in Seattle. Although I must say, you know, the Legion of Boom, they're as good as advertised. Watching the game last night against Minnesota, I think that secondary in Minnesota is right there step for step in terms of the most physical secondaries in the league.
Okay, and again, you know Mike Zimmer. I mean, he loves to have his guys just be aggressive. I mean, they're great covering, and they're angular and usually, but boy, he loves to make them tackle and tackle hard.
Yeah, the rep on corners, you know, obviously is to use a Deion Sanders phrase, they're not paid to make tackles. But in Mike Zimmer's defense, yeah, you are, and you got to be physical in Seattle's defense as well. So it just lends itself to that, an entire defense being physical when your back end is as physical as they are in Seattle and in Minnesota.
Do you have an adjustable rate mortgage that is about to increase, or first and second mortgage that you would like to combine into one? Low mortgage payment? Hey, give Keel Mortgage a call today. They are local, friendly, and have been serving families up and down the West Coast for over 3 decades. With interest rates forecasted to rise, the best time to explore your options is now. It starts with a phone call to 1-888-778-KIEL or online at keelmortgage.com. That's Keel Mortgage, 888-778-KIEL. They can help. CL 53969. As a coach in the league, and particularly as looking at the way you do things now, how long does it take now to just get settled in on your offense? Because, you know, there's a big difference from maybe 10 years ago. Number one, I mean, you don't have the extra practice time. You don't have the extra hitting. I mean, there's so little a coach can do to get things ready. So I don't know. Did it used to be 3 weeks, or now is it 4 weeks or 5 weeks to really settle in to what you're going to be offensively?
Well, I think we saw this first week with just a couple exceptions. Typically, the defense is usually a little ahead of the offense because of the timing. You know, you see a lot of big plays because, you know, you make a mistake on offense and you punt. You make a mistake on defense and strike up the band and kick an extra point. And so we saw a lot of big plays. We saw that in the Kansas City New England game, a couple broken coverages that led to big, big plays. A couple big plays last night with New Orleans and the Saints, obviously. And then obviously what you see typically with Aaron Rodgers and his ability to make big plays down the field when you break a coverage or you jump offside, something of that nature. So offenses typically, it takes a couple weeks, probably not as long as you think, for things to come together. Of course, injuries are going to be a factor as well in terms of getting into that groove. You look at a team like the Baltimore Ravens now to lose Danny Woodhead all of a sudden with what they were going to do with him. Now you have to adjust. So, yeah, notwithstanding injury, there's a couple weeks where you got to kind of settle into exactly who and what you're going to be.
Yeah, I don't want to try to tip off your playbook for Wednesday at 3 p.m. on the NFL Network, but I do want to try to see if you can unravel a couple mysteries for me. The New York Giants offense. A year ago, Jerry Reese does a great job, spends $200 million in unrestricted free agent contracts to get the defense fixed, and they shave 10 points a game off. And then here's offensive play caller Ben McAdoo as the head coach. They were averaging 26 points a game in 2005. They dropped down below 20, and they looked even worse in the opener against Dallas. What has happened to the Giants offense?
Well, you can go back to the time when Tom Coughlin was there. I remember visiting with Tom Coughlin when I was doing a game. And his biggest concern was he felt like they had evolved. They'd not been very physical in the offensive line, that they lacked what, you know, Chuck Knoll used to call that six-inch punch. And, of course, back then New York was all about being a physical running game to then augment an Eli Manning. And the same thing. I mean, they've put some draft choices in that offensive line. You're talking about two first-rounders, two second-rounders, and they're just not – they just don't seem to have – that same physicality that they've had in the past. So I think it does begin with the offensive line. And the running backs are again, they don't have the big physical punishing running backs, so they're not able to establish that. And it all then drops down into Eli Manning, who, as we know, can get hot and can be as good as anybody, can get on a stretch, though, too, where there are turnovers. And, of course, to go into the game without an OBJ, and to not have that physical running game, all of a sudden now that offense can look pretty pedestrian.
Yeah. I mean, do you think it can be fixed? I mean, I look at the talent there when Odell Beckham Jr. comes back, that they might have the most talented three receiver set in football with Brandon Marshall added to the mix. But, so far it's the slow start. Beckham not there for a couple weeks, probably with a high ankle sprain. Can they get that fixed?
Well, it's hard, particularly this, you're already into it and your offensive line is what it is and your running game is. Obviously, the three wide receivers, if healthy, will make a difference because that will loosen the box, so to speak, that allow you to run the ball more. But I'll keep coming back to the pitch count at the quarterback. But if Eli Manning is a 600-plus throw guy this year, I don't think that bodes well for New York. I think, obviously, as good as they're playing defense, they're going to need more in the running game. They're going to play in a physical division in that regard. And I don't mean that Eli Manning's not playing well and that he's not capable of producing at 600 yards. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that formula for them, I'm not sure they're good enough as a team to be a team that is going to throw the ball almost exclusively.
On the flip side, how good is Dallas, particularly now knowing that Ezekiel Elliott's going to be there indefinitely because of at least the overturn or the restraining order on the suspension?
Well, yeah, I mean, the fact that offensively, again, you talk about offensive line and maybe the best offensive line in football and a running back that is so physical. That's the thing with Ezekiel Elliott. He's always gets you positive yards. And Dak Prescott, I think you're also seeing, is continuing to grow to be able to take advantage. When you want to build that box, his ability to get the ball down the field to Dez Bryant, Terrence Williams, Cole Beasley with that spectacular one-handed catch that he made, and, of course, Jason Witten, I think you're going to see an increased ability for them to do damage down the field as you have to bring that extra guy in the box to stop the run and account for Ezekiel Elliott and that offensive line. And then the defense, last year they did just such a great job with the talent level they had. They're a little bit better on defense. They're not a top half of the league defense necessarily, but they're right around that. They're better, and Rod Marinelli does such a great job with them. They're not going to tend to get beat deep. So they have a good formula for them. They're going to pound away at you, make some big plays, get a bit of a lead, and that defense continues to get better. So, yeah, they're as advertised, and a lot of people's picked to be the best team in the NFC. We'll see if that's the case, but they're certainly in the conversation.
Speaking of big backs, I mean, any impressions of what you've seen either in the preseason or the first game from Eddie Lacy?
Pared down a little bit. I don't think he's going to be the dominant physical presence that they're used to with Marshawn Lynch. I think he can give them a good physical presence in Seattle. But again, it comes back. You got to have that offensive line as well. So yeah, I think he could have a good season. I don't think he's going to be a 300 plus carry dominant physical back that you saw, and in fairness, there's not a lot of guys that are that. I mean, Ezekiel Elliott was the only guy that carried the ball for 300 plus times last year.
Carson Palmer, who you've gone against so many times through the years, got off to a slow start. Then they find out that David Johnson's going to miss probably half the season with a wrist injury. Thoughts on the Arizona offense?
That's a concern, and Carson Palmer's been a great quarterback. I don't know where he is in terms of his progression. We keep talking about guys like him and Tom Brady and how long they can go. I'm concerned because when it happens, when a quarterback hits that point, the fall off is precipitous. And I don't know if Carson Palmer is there or not, but it's got to be a concern. And to lose David Johnson and that flexibility that he gave them, their defense is obviously going to continue to be fairly solid. But offensively, that's got to be a concern. I'm not sure where Arizona is going to be right now going forward, whether people really thought they could bounce back and be that team that they were 2 years ago. I'm not so sure they're not going to look more like what they were last year.
No question. And what a baffling start for Cincinnati. Playing Baltimore, getting just shut out, and Andy Dalton having a bad start. I know Baltimore's defense looks like it's going to be sensational, but how much did that surprise you, the way that game went? Because those games have been, man, I probably covered more than anybody else, are usually very close.
Yes, Baltimore struggled in Cincinnati the last few years. So to go in, I always put a great deal of value winning on the road. So I think that was a substantial win. I did the Ravens preseason games. You're right, that defense is absolutely for real. That front seven, they're as good and as deep in the secondary as they've been for a while. The question was offensively, about offensive lines. That offensive line did not play a single snap together in its entirety, in the entire preseason. So So they were really betting on the come. I think it's a better offensive line than people give it credit for, but it's got to stay healthy. And they've kind of, you know, settled in when they've got Stanley on the left tackle, Hurst, who has played tackle on right side, left side, he's in at guard. Jensen solidified at center. Marshall Yanda is a perennial Pro Bowler at guard. And Austin Howard is a big physical presence. He seems to hold up. To lose Danny Woodhead, that would be tough because they were really counting on him to be kind of the extended running game out of the backfield. They've got three potentially big play receivers with Perriman and Wallace going deep, and then Jeremy Macklin will take up the intermediate receptions that a Dennis Pitta had at the tight end position last year. So they potentially could be solid on offense to go with really a spectacular defense. What was it, five turnovers that they generated against Cincinnati? Going to be tough to beat anybody if you turn the ball over five times. Cincinnati just didn't seem to have anything they could hang their hat on. And you talk about a must game all but in week two, this Thursday night with Houston and Cincinnati coming off the losses they have. Somebody's going to be in really bad shape after Thursday night.
Yes, that Houston Bengal game is going to be at 5:25 Pacific time on the NFL Network. And then finally, who are the best defenses in the league right now?
Well, you got to begin obviously with I think Seattle obviously and Minnesota obviously have the pedigrees, and you know they're going to be really, really good. I think Pittsburgh is going to be very good defensively. The second half of the season, they were outstanding last year, and they pick up a Joe Hayden. You've already talked about Baltimore. That group is very, very much for real. So, you know, Denver looks to be, even though there were concerns, what happens with the changeover and Wade Phillips not there, they look to be as solid as usual, as is Kansas City. They've got the personnel, particularly with the rush up front. So, yeah, there are a lot of good defenses out there. New York's, we've already talked about, is going to be excellent as well. I think Green Bay is going to be substantially better than they were last year. So there's a lot of good defenses out there.
Hey, Brian, it's always great to catch up with you. And don't forget the NFL Playbook at 3 p.m. Pacific. That's on every Wednesday on the NFL Network. Brian, hope to be seeing you soon.
All right, John.
And that does it for this week's podcast. In between episodes, you can follow me on Twitter at ClaytonESPN. If you enjoy these weekly one-on-one conversations, consider leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time on Schooled with a Professor.